The Monster on Mandrake Street by Colin P. Davies. An Adventure in Five Parts. Part 3, in which Parvo finds, and then loses, his monster. Previously on The Monster on Mandrake Street. Monsters come in all shapes and sizes, but what do they want? Are they driven by an evil desire for destruction and death? Or simply by a basic need for food? Surveys carried out amongst monsters have produced little statistically significant information, for perhaps obvious reasons. Now, Parvo was on the trail of someone who just might know what was driving his particular monster. After a time, the Brinkman's vegetation hacking eased as the undergrowth thinned out. The group entered a dark woodland of night trees, an imaginatively named species whose wide and thickly bundled leaves shut out all but the merest hint of light. Only a faint purple illumination allowed them to see the spongy carpet of organic death that compressed beneath their feet, and occasionally gave way to send them tumbling into the damp, moldy body of the fetid forest. Parvo's acute sense of smell was assailed by the odor of decay, but he also discovered another scent. The unmistakable aroma of coffee. "Can you smell that?" he asked the guards. In the twilight, he could see them exchange glances and shrugs. Parvo rotated slowly, nose twitching, as he tried to attach a direction onto the scent.
"Okay, I think I've got it. This way."
He struck out into the unrelieved dimness. To his satisfaction, the smell became stronger, and soon he spotted a splinter of light, like a cut in a black curtain. He halted his band and stood still, studying the shape that nestled in the trees, giving it time to imprint on his eyes. The only sound was the breathing of his companions.
"It is a house," a guard announced.
Sudden fear struck at Parvo. The house in the forest. The muted birds he'd only just now noticed. The feeling of having stepped out of the world he knew. He was a little boy again, and a salivating demon was stalking him from the blackness. He shrugged the sensation away. He was Parvo, High Lord Pestmeister. He would not let childish fears disturb him. Besides, when did supernatural monsters drink coffee?
"Spread out. We'll move in from all sides. If this is the Spacer's house, I don't want her to slip away."
When the guards had melted into the darkness, he told his bodyguard,
"We'll take the front. Let's go."
Parvo weaved his way through the tree trunks. When he reached the gate to the front path, he stopped and examined the little cottage. He could make out small, paned windows in a pale wall, and a shingled roof punctured by two shuttered dormer windows that projected like blind eyes. The light was escaping from the window to the right of the front door. He whispered,
"I suppose the direct approach is best. You go and knock on the door."
The Brinkman did not reply.
Parvo turned and gazed into the blackness. He could see the barest outline of the nearest trees, but no bodyguard. The creature, his security, had vanished. Cold sweat prickled all over his body. He was all alone in the woods at the house of a witch? He laughed and shook his head. His men must be nearby, though he could not hear them. They must be nearby. Parvo doubted many things. The existence of the Broadheads, for one, and the author's signature on his first edition of Pests and Pestilence, for another. But he did not doubt his own courage. He opened the rickety wooden gate and crunched up the gravel path. At the door, he hesitated and tried to calm his breathing, then knocked. He heard a shuffling, saw a light appear on the edge of the door. Then the lock clicked and the door opened. An old woman in uniform, the spacer, stood facing him. Yellow light from a luminescent ceiling globe at her back put her ugly face in shadow, a blessing for which Parvo was grateful.
"You again," she said. "What do you want?"
"This is an odd place to live, in permanent darkness."
"It reminds me of being out there, in space. Anyway, do I comment on your home?"
"You're comparing a highly sought-after residence with a hovel in the forest."
The woman scowled. "I'm just a simple transport worker. A nobody. A retired nobody. I asked what you wanted."
"Your importance has just been elevated from persona non grata to essential companion. From non-entity to celebrity."
"You have a way with words. What's your point?"
"You're under arrest."
She tugged at her thin hair. "On what charge?"
"On the charge of not realizing I don't need a charge on account of me being in charge."
Parvo drew himself up to his tallest.
"You have to come with me."
"Maybe I don't want to come with you."
"Maybe I'm not giving you a choice."
"Is that so?"
Parvo heard the shuffle of feet behind him and snapped around with fingers clawed and ready to strike.
His Brinkman bodyguard stood there, dejected and humbled. The lenses of its mirror shade shattered.
"What happened?"
Parvo asked.
"Did you get jumped?"
The creature shook its head, an awkward movement due to the lack of neck. It gestured toward a tree and mimicked a smack in the face.
"You walked into a tree?"
A miserable nod. Parvo tore the glasses from the creature's face and waved them in front of its eyes.
"Any idea why?"
A six-armed shrug. Parvo shook his head and returned his attention to the spacer who, surprisingly, was still there.
"You could have run. I would have taken the chance."
"I am not you."
"Then pack a few things. You're coming to stay with me."
Parvo's men had arrived and they gathered behind the bodyguard. The old woman sighed. "I see I have a little choice. Very well. Just a moment." She reached behind the door and came up with a suitcase. "Let's go."
"You're ready?"
"I am a spacer," she said. "I'm always ready. For anything."
"You captured the spacer on your own?" Inyar skipped around the perimeter of the thick chessboard rug that occupied the center of Parvo's circular reception room. "Weren't you nervous? You didn't even have a weapon."
"Not entirely true,"
Parvo admitted. In fact, he carried an entire arsenal inside his Pestmeister trench coat.
"My hands are my weapons."
"And then she made a run for it? You had to chase her down?"
"Not exactly."
Parvo stood at the tall, arched window looking down on the courtyard where his guards were bringing the old woman across from the cells to his quarters. He glanced at the large tooth in his hand.
You need to go now. I want to question the fairy godmother.
Can't I stay?
Sorry. Health and safety. You know how it is.
But you will tell me everything?
If that's what you want.
It is, Sigmund. It is. After Einar had left, Parvo glanced at his trench coat, which hung near the door to his bedroom. He considered putting the coat on for added insurance, then cast the thought aside. He was capable of handling an old woman without the need for hidden tricks and tools. Besides, he intended to project an aura of innocuousness with his casual beige sweater and checked trousers. He'd even considered accessorizing with a pipe, but concluded that he'd gain little additional advantage from a cloud of floating bubbles. Two burly soldiers bundled the handcuffed spacer into the room and dumped her in a high-armed wooden chair. Parvo dismissed the men, closed the door, and turned to his prisoner.
I would offer my apologies for bringing you here, but my insincerity may be apparent.
You think I don't want to be here?
You appeared less than keen. The woman smiled.
The palace is the one place on this world that the monster couldn't get to. Your security's too good.
Ah, yes, the monster. The girl on Mandrake Street told me about your monster.
You sound skeptical.
Oh, I don't doubt that monsters do exist. I have a whole world of them. But I'm less certain of your monster. How could you share a ship and not meet...
His words trailed off, and he pointed at her with the tooth.
What do you mean this is the one place the monster couldn't get to?
The woman held up her bound wrists.
Why keep me cuffed? Are you nervous of me, Parvo?
He took a moment to examine his captive and his own feelings.
Should I be?
The woman shook her shackles and they fell, still locked, to the polished floor.
Maybe you should.
Parvo took a step back.
Is that something you learned in the service?
Let's just say I have malleable mitts.
You can say that if you like,
Parvo told her. He waved the tooth at the door.
But I'm going to say guards rather loudly if you move out of that chair.
To answer your unfinished question, there's a very simple reason why I didn't meet the monster.
Parvo felt pulse pounding in his head.
This was unexpected, to say the least. Which is?
The woman stood.
I am the monster.
The flesh on her face juddered and flowed, and suddenly Parvo was staring at himself.
A Parma puppeteer.
He'd learned of them at the academy, but never met one. Able to shift shape, stretch limbs, grow or lose hair, they were all but impossible to find, let alone catch. For a moment, he was stunned. That moment was sufficient for the creature to swing a huge ham fist onto the point of Parvo's chin. He tumbled backward onto the rug. Blackness and pain descended and would have taken him except for the sharpness of his reactions. He'd rolled with the punch and reduced its formidable power. He lay still and watched through slit eyelids as the puppeteer slipped into his trench coat, fastened it tight to hide its own clothes, and then returned to stoop down next to him. The nails on the creature's right hand extended into small scimitars.
"Sweet dreams,"
said the puppeteer as it raised its claws ready to finish him.
Parvo's fingers were still clamped to the alien tooth, and now he rolled and swung the heavy object into the side of the creature's knee. While his doppelganger screamed and limped backwards, Parvo leapt to his feet, threw the tooth more as a distraction than as a missile, and sprang into his bedroom. He slammed the door and turned the key.
He might only have seconds. What was his next move? He could go to the barred window and shout, but the guards would discover two Parvos. How could he trust them to kill the right one? A commotion in the other room grabbed his attention. The guards had come in, and now started beating on his door. He heard a voice exactly like his own shout. The monster's taken on my appearance, but you can identify me by this tooth I carry. Don't listen to its lies. They twist your thinking. Kill it before it tears out your throat. Kill it before it rips out your eyes. Kill it! Kill it! Kill it!
It seemed a reasoned debate was out of the question.
Next time on The Monster on Mandrake Street,
Parvo skipped up the steps and, holding the clapper silent, unfastened the bell from its bracket. He now jumped to the ground and squeezed his head and shoulders into the narrow gap under the floor, bringing the bell up in front of his face. He sounded the alarm, rattling the clapper furiously. The sound was deafening in the confined space under the house. He heard urgent fluttering below the floor and panicked footsteps above his head. People crashed out of the building, chattering in confusion and searching for the source of the ringing. Leaving the bell behind, Parvo wiggled out of the gap and got to his feet. He brushed dirt off his checkered trousers. Faces turned toward him. He shrugged.
No fire under there.